broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network. Please join us in the chat room at wolfspiritmedia.net. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, beyond. Tune in with TalkStream Live, search for Ever Beyond. Also, you can call to listen on 712-432-9588. Selected archives are also available on my YouTube channel, Studio 9 Jam. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yes, you are. Good evening. It's the 11th of February, 2018. And this is Ever Beyond on Ever Beyond Radio, broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network, heard on wolfspiritradio.com, wolfspiritmedia.net, wolfspiritmedia.com, it's getting bigger, and probably, and very most likely, Studio 9 Jam on YouTube. And welcome to everybody who's listening in the present and listening in the future, presumably because there's something in this show that will talk to you, will speak to your soul, and recognize that you're part of something bigger. And we're going to be talking about the state of things as they are. It's an exciting time. We were born for interesting times. Perhaps we're cursed. Good evening. My guests are Tolek and Adonna of the Andromeda Council, and I'd like to welcome you onto the show. Good evening.
Well, hello, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So,
hi, JP.
Oh, there you are. Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
Well, I'm doing marvelous here in the Southwest. It's a beautiful day today.
That's nice. We had snow, but it was still beautiful. there's a slight data delay there. So Tolek, what's news? What's going on for you?
Well, that's a pretty broad question. Are there some particular topics that you'd like to talk about in terms of, you know, what's being bantered about on the internet?
Basically there's this whole movement going on with QAnon and some kind of cabal takedown by the US Marines, presumably helped by extraterrestrial forces. How about that for a start off?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. I happened to be in a meeting late last night at an undisclosed place with a couple of people I can't name yet who addressed that very topic and said that the base at Guantanamo Bay is being enlarged and the holding quarters are being enlarged as well for what I guess could be accurately called political detainees in the near future for crimes against humanity.
An ex-VIP lounge.
Yes. Yeah, that's pretty well said, actually. Yeah. Yeah, and apparently it's being enlarged to hold a few thousand people.
Still not big enough, and though.
Yeah. Pithy sense of humor you have, sir.
Oh, well, you know, I have ideals, you know, I got standards and like they're not here yet. So we have to make do with what we got and we take what we get and, you know, it's a step ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, so you've got a gig coming up. Is that right?
Oh, yes. We're in the early formation stages, but we have 1, 2, 3, 4 speakers committed already. The 2018 Transformational Shift Conference is scheduled for this late September, the last weekend of September. And it's called The Great Awakening. Messages from Our Galactic Family. That's the initial name of this conference. Yours truly, Adana, sitting next to us, sitting next to me, has committed as one of the speakers. Michael Horn, who is the U.S. media representative for Billy Meier, you know, the Billy Meier Pleiadian plagiarian case. Michael Horn is a committed speaker. Let's see, who else? Tom Dongo, legendary Tom Dongo of Sedona, who's been on the Bradshaw Ranch, who's had more sightings and UFO ET contact than probably most people can count. Those three people have committed. The other one that committed just yesterday is another very gifted woman. Her name is Shakara Tosha. She just moved to Sedona. And she's probably one of the more gifted light language ladies that I've ever met. She can not only speak light language, but she's had relatively recent codes downloaded into her where she can interpret and say, well, this particular language I'm speaking is Arcturian, or this particular language I'm speaking is from the Andromeda Galaxy, or this particular language I'm speaking is from one of the many star systems in the Pleiades. It's amazing that she's been able to discern what she's saying and be able to translate as well, which is, that's the first,
that's
first time
one.
For me that I've
that's
ever, yeah, that's the first time for me that I've ever heard of someone was able to discern a particular star language and what star system it's coming from and what the messages are. So those are the four initial guests, and I'm working on another couple as well, maybe two or three. So I'm excited. It's going to be an equally exciting event as last year, I certainly hope. It was last year's event was well attended. Given the size of the venue, we almost sold out. Both places could have held 80. And I think we got 74 or 75 people, you know, not including the speakers and a couple, you know, and a few volunteers. This year we're going to be at the Sedona Creative Life Center, which apparently is a pretty famous venue for spiritual UFO ET kind of conferences. So on Saturday and Sunday, we'll be able to accommodate upwards of 200 people. And then we're going to have a special sort of up close and personal meet and greet the speaker thing on Friday night, and we'll maybe accommodate 50 or 60 people. I'm not sure that number yet, but so that's what's going on. That's exciting for, you know, toward the latter part of this year. Adana and I may hit the road sometime this summer and speak up in Mount Shasta. Now that's a good strong possibility, but so far that's all that's on the horizon for now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, well, so thanks for asking.
Thanks for asking. Yeah. You're very welcome. Well, I hope that the gigs go off. I do like a gig. I keep threatening to go out on the road, but I never do. You know, it's been 3 or 4 years and I haven't. So I'm not going to say anything.
Well, I'll speak up.
But I'd like to, you know, I've got the equipment, but I haven't got a vehicle and I haven't got a venue. But I got all the gear, you know, I could broadcast it live. That wouldn't
well,
be a problem.
Maybe we could coerce slightly, gently, Simon Parks, and maybe we could come out to see you in the UK, you know, with the right kind of dollars and the right kind of backing, we could make that trip. And Adana and I have talked about it a couple times. We really want to speak in Europe. And
well, wait until I've actually done some. Because then I know. Until I know, I don't know. You see what I mean? So I need to do like a warm-up thing, you know, practice, a test bed of like, does this idea of mine that is purely in the mental zone, does it remain there and I'm just a mental mental zoner? Or does this thing actually work? You know, I've got a 16, I could have like 8 speakers up on a thing, each with their own mic. I get, you know, I've got all the gear there. I'm a sound engineer and know how to do it all. It's just that I need more people and, you know, I can't do a one man show like that. That's pretty.
Yeah. And I can't imagine any of the sheep that you have in Northern Scotland being able to work those controls at all.
Yeah, that's right. It's very hard. They haven't got opposing thumbs.
Like the cat.
No,
you know, I could try and teach the cat to you know, sound engineer, but, it's those thumbs. They just can't, grab hold of the thing. Well, I suppose Anyway.
We'll work on it.
Currently preferring the warmth of the laptop. So.
Yes. So, do you have some tea this afternoon?
Yeah, I have my tea here.
Good.
In this China teacup. Very nice one.
Good.
It's got a fractal type pattern on it. We do like tea here in the Wolf Spirit studio. Studio 9 it is. Well, maybe Studio 9C. It's a long story.
Yes.
And that's why my channel is called Studio 9 Jam, is because I originally ran this studio. And as I, you know, as I got the keys to it, it said on the thing, Studio 9. I thought, wow, that sounds so cool. I like the number 9 myself. And, it's really cool.
Completion.
Yeah.
Completion number.
Completion. Yeah. So Studio 9 is a nice place. So, and I've, although I haven't lived there for another 9 years ago, we had a great time, and there's a kind of legacy, of it. I had a sort of jam night and things. People used to come, and, we had a fire outside, and, you know, and a couple of days ago, a guy came by and said, I remember these days. They were great days. So, so that's what the Studio 9 Jam is about. It used to be a thing that I did, and now I do it like with talking with people. And, so tonight, here we are. Pleiadian. Yes. Dakota, Tegeta,
yes, and many other dimensions that we probably aren't aware of yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've had Wendy Kennedy and Nora Herold with their ninth dimensional Pleiadian collectives. There are the Plejarans, as you were saying. Where do the Plejarans fit in?
Yeah, my understanding, the way I heard it explained many years ago, was that they were in a time-space dimension in the same area of space, but farther out than the Pleiades. You know, we would see it. We would see it as the Pleiades, but they're farther.
They're behind it.
Behind it.
Yeah, because it kind of extends further back, doesn't it? I mean, the Pleiades is really what we would see as the tail of our galaxy, isn't it?
The tail of our galaxy. Donna's always been very fond of the Pleiades. Do you have any comments on where the Pleiades is located, relevant to the Milky Way galaxy?
The way I have been taught by, Sultana, the commander, for the biosphere, Andromeda Council biosphere, is that according to the mapping that we know of, the Orion, constellation, when you see the Orion constellation, then you were able to see the Pleiades, which is beyond that. How far out? Usually Sultar doesn't usually give me the numbers because human beings can't quite grasp as to how far out in distance in terms of millions and billions and trillions of miles away. But it's close enough to my understanding, it's kind of like close neighbors to each other, because we occupied pretty much the same space, I should say area of space, that they could determine that, much like, you know, cities that we have, nearby cities that's 5 miles away from here, the same kind of metaphor that you would use in terms of our location, the solar system, of where we're at compared to where the Pleiades are located in the skies. So that's the only answer that I could come up with relatively in terms of the basic English language what Sotar has explained to me often enough before. So the only thing you could do is by astronomy. Usually I go to sidarium.org, which has the star mapping, and put in the Pleiades, and they could tell you pretty much according to the mathematics of how far it is from where we are here.
Yeah, I've got they're around 400 light years. It's kind of averages, you know, some are 370, some are 410, you know, but around 400 light years is the Pleiades. I'm looking at right now on my screen on Stellarium. Brilliant program indeed.
Oh, it's great. And or maybe three Stargate jumps. I don't know exactly, but, you know, cause people don't travel they don't travel that kind of distance in space with ships. They jump gate.
Yeah. So here's another thing. All right. So if star systems are like cities, is there an equivalent to people living in the countryside? I mean, are there kind of planets in deep space that don't have stars, for instance? Places where people are just living, maybe on the inside, having a fine little time.
Oh, well, certainly the concept of biospheres is not something new. JP was asking if there's the equivalent of people living out in the countryside, say maybe in a far distant star system, maybe not on a planet surface, but in it. I know that topic has been kicked around regarding the subject matter of the moon recently. There are people that are talking about the fact that it's not only hollow, but it's got many levels inside, operational levels having to do with environment, having to do with cosmic human and ET hybrid lab operations, all sorts of fun things. Because as a number of people talked about, including our own astronauts, when they landed on the moon, I think it was either Cooper or it was a Buzz Aldrin. They saw ships. They saw a scout craft parked next to a crater, and they're like, hey, we're not alone here. And B, you know, when they landed, they heard this kind of like dong, this resonant sound when they landed on the surface. And a solid object should not resonate that kind of sound.
So the moon is like a bell.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, the moon itself is a biosphere.
Yeah. So, okay. So here's the thing. Are there spheres within spheres within spheres? Because, you know, what happens to the gravity? Is there some, hang on. Is there a gravity generating star-like thing at the middle of one of these biospheres?
A gravity generating, like, it would have to be, and Don is nodding her head. Yeah, I was going to say, it would have to be some kind of, perpetual energy system that puts out, and right now I'm speaking only intuitive, it puts out an evenly balanced pulsating energy system, which creates atmosphere, environment. Of course, that kind of system can also control an artificial day and an artificial night. They do all these things. Donna, your thoughts?
Well, it's not only in terms of talking about the moon. They also talk about this with Mars. They talk about this with other type of planetary environment that the advanced technology being put into place that can help the planet and help its people to improve the quality of life of the environment surrounding the planet and within the planet itself. So I have been told by Sultan that there are several planets that we call planets, but actually are biospheres that are quite capable of having this type of advanced technology to perform its operations within the planet and surrounding the planet itself. So I'm not at all surprised at what I have seen over the years, in the past 30 years of information that I have received from our star people. Earth is going to come into that too, as well as it evolves, because they are working with the internal systems of the Earth in terms of improving our quality of life. And it's not only affecting the planet, but it's also affecting the life form that is upon the planet and within the planet, including humanity. So this is part of the ongoing evolutionary process, you know, throughout the galactic communities that are coming together, especially in the memberships into the Galactic Federation. A lot of these planets are coming together with their people to help each other improve their quality of life. And even some of them that are new into this jumpstart their quality of life among those planets. It's such a deep detail, but that's the basic line in terms of what I'm understanding from Soltar.
Cool. So.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
There is. Where do we start?
You know, and by the way, it's tangential, but it's worth noting. There's always been this chase for gold, and whether you call it a fabricated, created desire in people in terms of a chase for wealth, it's my understanding from information that we've learned from our commander buddy and brother that gold is not just gold as a precious metal, but more importantly, its real value to ETs that travel the cosmos is that it is a fuel source that is used for various higher vibratory propulsion systems. And it also is used and it's transformed into, it's like a catalyst mineral that's transformed into becoming, into creating an atmosphere around a planetoid that can travel through space. It can create an atmosphere. And then of course, what they'll do is they'll use the internal technology that they have in these, for lack of better words, large scale, propulsion systems. They'll use the gold for the atmosphere, and then they'll protect the planetoid traveling through space with a force field. And that force field will keep a breathable atmosphere within the context of the perimeter, if you will, the outer perimeter of the planet. This is amazing technology, but
sort of like a foam, like a gold, a metal foam layer would look beautiful, wouldn't it?
I hadn't even thought about the color aspect of it. I was just thinking about how it's used as, you know, think of a simple equation. Somebody takes some powdered fruit crystals, puts them in the bottom of the glass, and they add water, and all of a sudden you have fruit juice. Well, in this case, they take gold, they process it, they change it alchemically, and it becomes an environment. It becomes a breathable oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen environment surrounding a planetoid.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
so what else?
And that's why there was a whole bunch of people a long time ago, in our terms, who came here to strip mine the planet of gold, yeah?
Right, and there is still a lot of gold in the mountains, under the seas on this planet. That's one of the reasons why there are so many undersea bases and why so many ETs come to this planet, because it's not only water rich, it's mineral rich. And the mineral they desire the most in terms of creating atmospheric conditions around their planetoids is gold. Why? It's a fuel source.
So is this essentially the reality behind all of these gold heists that the cabal have been executing through all these years, that they're actually, that the gold doesn't really exist because they've sold it all to the aliens for their spaceships?
Right. And if you take the concept of cabal to its ultimate leadership, we're talking about Draco, Sirius B, Hydra, Orion, reptilians. That's, I mean, at the top of the powder, sorry, at the top of the power pyramid of cabal is the reptilians, at least the few that are left on planet. And yeah, that's, they specifically use gold to power their ships. Absolutely. And that's why, that's why gold was instituted as a foundation for the financial system that they created in the Babylonian times. And it's, it all, unfortunately, all leads to the reptilians when you talk about the management abuse, financial prison nature of this planet. It's an absolutely beautiful planet, but we've been taken financial prisoners by this money system they instituted, backed by gold. So here's the therefore. Therefore, until we get rid of the use of the concept, the use of and the concept of money, we're not going to be free beings on this planet. Money, the whole concept and use of money has to go away in order for us to be free.
It's psychically poisoned. And, you know, every part of every aspect of money is poisoned in a way that is a drudgery to have it pass through your hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because it, you know, if you, and you've spoken with Alex enough, one of his people, I'm not sure if it was Visayas or Mornay, said, excuse me, you have to pay to live on your own home planet? He kind of just shook his head. Exactly. He's like, that doesn't make any sense.
So, Adana, would you like to, chip in, if you excuse the high-tech pun.
You want to chip in or chime in to these thoughts about gold and the money system and the nature of us as financial prisoners on this planet?
And particularly the alternatives that have been worked out by our star brethren.
Oh, you mean like just...
How does everybody else do it?
Oh, in deep space, open trade, simply for the sake of helping each other. But yeah, I'm going to close my mouth and let Adana chip in here.
Okay. One of the things that, as you guys were talking, I was talking to my commander brother and I said, okay, if they're taking the gold and keep, pulling out these gold, what's going to happen to the gold in terms of production of it? And Soltar told me that there will always be gold producing by the magma that flows underneath the earth. And he said they could continue building gold. That's what this planet has properties of. And the other thing that I have talked about over the years with them about explaining to them how we live. Because I've had ET people come to me and ask me, what do you mean you have to have paper money in order to buy your house, buy your car, buy your food? Right. You mean to tell me you have to work for a paper in order to get these things, or coins to get these things? I said, yes, that's that's how we became enslaved, because of the initial beginnings of the manufacturing gold. And then it has been enslaving humanity throughout the centuries. So humanity has been accustomed to having to work for a living in order to provide for themselves. And so our star families keep shaking their heads like, I don't understand that, because that is not their concept. That is not the way they operate on the other dimensions. They always trade with each other. There is always plenty of supplies to go around in the universe. But here we are, this one little bald planet, Earth, and we're struggling to live. And we have to live through by means of financial system. Now, they're working on breaking down these financial systems. It has to die out. It has to make its change. But because we have been under the program Baptist for so long, for centuries, in this money world that we live in, we have to unprogram and undo all of that has happened to us in order to restore us back to the idea of sharing with each other, helping each other, and trade with each other. But that's going to take several years in the making once the Earth moves into her new paradigm. Then it's going to take several years after that in order to people to reorientate back to the idea of the basics, that is to help each other and share what we have with each other and make trading agreements between our planet to other members of the Galactic Federation planets that wants to trade with us. So it's a long process, but it's coming.
Well, that's a good thing to listen to, because, well, we can't go on, because it's like, a whole bunch of, people trading. Yeah. There's a great big bus. It's like, there's a great big bus coming that's got some that's going to need some petrol or some gasoline. And people are trading on the gasoline before the bus gets here. And it's like, I'm not really explaining this very well, but the gold is not theirs to play with, but they've been trying to make money from us somehow. I don't get it. They cheat us out of our gold in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And worse than that, think about the fact that the U.S. Federal Reserve note. Now, let's take a look at those words individually from a legal perspective. So, the United States Treasury hasn't created money in years. Now, and there's only caveat to that statement. One caveat is, according to and you'll forgive me if I don't remember the document that stipulates this, but according to a certain governmental document, money is defined as metal coinage. So that's the first legal definition. Secondarily, of course, the United States, are we talking about the corporation or the country? Now we'll move on to the language that's printed on that piece of paper that has been used as the global trading dollar for years. This note is good for all debts, public and private. JP, do you happen to know the legal definition of note?
It's frequency, isn't it?
Very funny. A note by legal definition, is a piece of debt paper.
An IOU.
Yes. So we are using debt paper in exchange with each other to create more debt for ourselves that we pay the federal, that we pay the private agency called the Federal Reserve to print and manage money. They're basically high level dressed up in a pretty suit loan shark with usury fees. That's what's going on. The Federal Reserve is a loan shark dressed up in suits, and they charge us usury fees that we pay in the form of IRS taxes, which are voluntary, by the way, and that's a whole nother discussion. But every time we exchange that piece of paper, we create more debt for ourselves. Don't you like that one? and it's been selected by, of course, the certain powers up at the top to keep us in debt for years since, I don't know, 1920 something, the meeting in Jekyll Island. Before that, money was the creation of the U.S. Treasury. So at least it was a governmental agency. But now you're talking about debt paper that's been traded that puts each American person in greater debt every time he hands over one of these ugly little green things. I'm a student of political science. I'm not saying I'm a scholar, but I know enough about the legal definitions that that's exactly what's going on. So
philosophically though, Tolik, I believe that debt equals doubt. How about that?
Debt equals doubt. Yeah,
the more self-doubt you have, the more debt you'll create. It's like a function of it. Mm. And you have to hold a certain pressure of believing in oneself in order to generate money, haven't you? You know, people who are lucky have a certain self-belief that makes that happen. And I believe it's the opposite of doubt. Anyway, it's just the thing.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
And I believe that the self-doubt is one of these empire brainwashing mind control concepts. It's one of their techniques for keeping large populations under control, everybody in doubt about themselves.
There's another way you could say that, which is those beings that have been on the top of the power pyramid around the globe have done their best and continue to do the best to perpetuate circumstances and events that create fear. And the more fear that they can create and instill on the global populace, the greater control they have. Now, fortunately, that's being reduced by chunks and slices and pieces, but until all of those beings that have been in power for years controlling this planet, until every last one of them is gone, whether it's a human, a cosmic human reptilian hybrid, or a reptilian and or any other malevolent ET that's on this planet, until they're all gone, we're not going to get our planet back yet. That's every single one of those bad news beings has to leave, has to be removed, has to be taken out of power. That when that moment happens, that's when we become free, when it's our planet again. That's the ultimate goal. It needs to become our planet again.
Yeah, and in terms of, because one of the things that Adonna says, and I'd like you to comment maybe also on this, Adonna, is when the Earth ascends, namely that the planet is ascending and we might get to know about it a little while later. Is that what we're talking about here?
Okay, I'll repeat what you just said. What JP just said is the moment when Mother Earth, when the planet ascends and births herself as a higher dimensional world, Is that the moment that we're talking about when this planet will be free? Or will we be a free planet before that happens? You know, ultimately, when we get rid of all of these people, all of these beings that have been controlling the planet, is there an if-then situation? Will one happen before the other? Do you have a sense for? So she's percolating. Go ahead.
Soltai said that the cleanup has to be done first.
Yeah.
The cleanup of all of the negative things has to be cleared out.
Yeah.
Before the actual ascension of the earth, because you can't bring in the old paradigm into the new.
That's right.
So they have to do the cleanup prior to the ascension. And the cleanup has been going on really hard in terms of our ET star families dedicating to clear out all of the negative ETs, if you will, and their factions, wherever they may be in the world. Yep. And when that takes place and everything is cleared out, that's the moment when Mother Earth shifts into her ascension process. And because then it will be a pure, clean world. I mean, starting over, so to speak, in a higher dimensional form, way of life. Does that help answer your question, JP?
I think so. It's like she, the phrase escaped me a second ago. She's like finished up the business. You know, these things have to be done before you can move on, haven't you? You got to,
right.
You know, put your affairs in order.
Yeah. And you can't, at this point, to use a metaphor, changing the oil and putting new cylinders in the car is not going to happen. You have to take out the old engine. It needs a brand new engine with brand new technology as a metaphor. Oh, oil changing.
I look forward to my gravity generated free energy seg motor vehicle.
There you go. It probably won't have wheels.
Well, exactly. You wouldn't need them. You know, then you wouldn't need roads. I suppose people could walk, yeah. Maybe more people will walk places. You know, it'd be really cool to have like a teleport within walking distance that has a short distance. Or that, you know, that any teleport can go anywhere, anywhen. You know, just the thing.
Yeah, walk outside.
What is the...
Walk outside, push a button, create your own jump gate. I think it's a great idea.
Exactly. Does that happen? Again, because the biosphere, here's the thing. How do people move about within the biosphere? Or do they have little vehicles, little floaty things? Are there elevators? Are there monorails? What's the deal? How do people move around?
I'm smiling. Donna, he's asking, how do people move around within the Andromeda Council biospheres? You know, the hostile ships, all the engineering biospheres, all of them. There are a number of transport systems, but I'll let Donna play with this one.
Oh, this is going to be a fun one. Now, most people would think a biosphere, 5 mile, 10 miles wide. No, it's the size of a planet. So you think about subway systems. You think about teleportation system.
Right.
You think about, you could go from point A to point B in a few minutes. You go from one side of the biosphere to the other side of the biosphere. You're there within a few minutes. It doesn't take hours to get there like we do by cars or by boat or by airplane. It takes us several hours to get from point A to point B. Not when you have portal system placed in, a teleportation and subway system in there. It's easy to go through from one place to another in a biosphere in a short amount of time.
That would have helped us when we went to Australia this year.
Yeah, that would really help us. Boy, just, 15 hours on a plane, that's too long.
You know, you're not far from one.
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah, well said. Yeah.
Hey, tell us about the portal in Tombstone.
Well, you're close. There is a town in southeastern Arizona named Portal. And it is close. Yeah, it is close to Tombstone. And there, I have heard and read a couple of different stories about how people have wandered into different areas in the wilderness. And there you are. And that area is a little more lush and green than the rest of Arizona, but suffice it to say, it's still desert. People have walked into different areas of the desert, maybe in caves, and they get a certain distance in and they open their eyes and all of a sudden they're looking at subtropical and tropical vegetation, sunlight inside in an area that shouldn't have sunlight, palm fronds and, you know, banana trees. There are dimensional doorways. And yes, they exist in Portal, Arizona.
Portal,
I like Arizona. I like the harp. That was good. Nice touch.
that's my time machine sound. Because it can take you anywhere. It's any when. It's a portal in itself. So.
And that's actually another topic for discussion. Yeah, when this planet becomes a higher dimensional world, the top end of 4D and 5D, people will have higher dimensional human capabilities, including self-generated teleportation. That's part of being a higher dimensional human. You go, all right, I'm in Whitby, and I want to go to Dublin. Think it, you're there. That's part of being a higher dimensional human. Self-generated teleportation, as depicted in the movie Jumper, So that's just part of higher dimensional life.
You know, there used to be a TV show on my in my youth, back in the days. It was in the 1970s, called The Tomorrow People. In fact, I get this sound. That's the sound of them doing exactly what you just said.
Wow.
They were called the Tomorrow People. They were, and like they're 12, 13 strand kids are waking up. And one of the first shows is that there's a child and she's in the market. And suddenly she hears all these people and starts holding her head and screaming. And these two guys, they kind of jaunt in, they beam in, they call it jaunting. And, they take her back to their lab where she's kind of educated as to, you know, you're waking up and this is what it feels like. And we know, you know, it's like a sort of, awakening Neo moment. And, they have all these different, superpowers, so to speak, just like what you're talking about. And they were talking about this is in the 1970s. Finally, we're getting, it's coming through. So please tell us more about these things, Adonna.
JP said, what he's asking is, tell us more about higher dimensional life and what humans are like as higher dimensional humans.
Okay.
It's actually a fascinating topic.
What I have seen when I was there for the biosphere, at least one of the Drama Council many biospheres, they have a normal life in their dimension. Just like we have our normal life here, where we're living in this physical world. In their world, in their dimension, they could telepath, they could levitate. Some of them can eat, pure fruits, no. Kind of like fruits that have all the components in it, including protein. That means that they don't eat animals, you know, like we do here, beef and chicken, fish. They have recreation facilities there. They have parks and mountains and lakes. So, if, you know, if you think of our planet on the surface of our Mother Earth, you see what we have on this geographical, topographing type of planet. Well, in the biosphere, they do have and built into those areas that are parks that have the variety of their homes from their star systems. And each level of the dimensions, it depends on where they're from. They have their own floors where, you know, they live their lives on those floors in different dimensions. And they were showing me one time about this particular couple with a child. The child must be at least a year or 2 years old. And the mother was over there washing dishes. They were just giving me an earth familiarity of what we do with our normal life here on this planet. And then she told the child to go play. And it got quiet in the kitchen. So she telepathed to the child, where are you? And she said, I'm up here, Mommy. And she looked up. He was getting ready to fly out the door, levitate out of the door, out of the room. She called her husband and said, you better grab this kid and make him stay grounded. Yeah. So he was grounded because he wanted to take off. He said, oh, no, you've got things to do here in the house. So it's just a typical life, what they have there. And a lot of the things that are happening here right now, people that are awakening to their gifts, people that are fine-tuned their telepathic communications, their possibly levitation abilities. I've had stories being told to me that actual levitation did take place because they have been practicing with it over a year. And eating the right type of food that you can levitate. So as more and more people become aware that they can develop these abilities, they're going to be way ahead of this curve. And so there's a lot of us that are awake and aware people that are ahead of the curve for a reason. So that we can turn around and help our people here to get them to be familiar with telepathy, levitation, teleportation, all of the terminologies that we're coming into so that they can, should I say, adjust to the incoming new way of life that we're going to come into. When we all ascend or when we transform into our higher human forms on this planet. So that's what's happening. That's what's going on around the world today. I've had a lot of emails from a lot of my clients who have told me that they are beginning to be able to hear their star families and receiving symbols and receiving light languages is coming out more and more now than I've ever have seen in all the years that I have been awakened. So they're coming home, so to speak, to reconnect with their star families. And I'm not at all surprised that the star families are the first people that would be communicating with their Earth people here on the planet. So there's a reunion going on right now, even way before the Earth makes her ascension, a lot of the, I don't know what they call the forefront, the people in the forefront, are experiencing this now, so that they could turn around and help the other people who have yet to get there. So that's basically what's going on. That's what they're familiarizing us with, ever since I can remember as a little girl, that they were, teaching me about life, on the biospheres and, on other worlds as well.
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
And, sorry, there's an echo in the background that makes it sound strange. And, so we'll be coming up for a break in a minute. So, do you want to cover a kind of short, topic that might have arisen for you before the break?
Ah, okay. I'm going to toss this question over to Radhana. Out of the, so you've been doing your star ancestry work for a year and a few months now.
Since November 2016.
Yep. Right. So a year and a few months and, in excess of probably around 700 people around the globe.
Between 700 to 800 people. I haven't really gone back to count through all of them, but.
Okay.
It's getting close to that.
And in 35 plus countries, maybe more.
Yes.
And so here's my question. Out of the different people who have become Star Ancestry clients, how many of them, would you say are self-aware, highly enlightened, humans that are, you know, keenly aware of their own Star Ancestry? Now you may have confirmed details for them. But how many of them have said to you, I'm already communicating with my star family members. I'm already aware of, are there any people that are aware of those kinds of capabilities that you're talking to?
That's a good question because, only a few of my clients would tell me that. Where with the telepathic communication with their star families? I probably would say half.
Wow. Half of them?
I would say half.
That are already communicating at some level.
So there are a few people that are in communication with their star family, but they just wanted their confirmations confirmed because, you know, when you first get accustomed to telepathy, you're not sure whether it's your own mind that's talking to you or whether they're talking to you because they're using their own voices right. Because that's what we're accustomed to. And then once we get past that, then, you know, they will recognize if it's masculine or feminine or, you know, the identification of the star families. So,
But that's, I'm surprised. That's a high number. You know, somewhere around 350 plus.
That's what telling me. It's about half of them. But not all of them will write in and say, oh, I'm awake and there, you know, in telepathic communication.
Mm.
But they just basically want the information confirmed. They say, oh, yeah. You know, that's right. That's what I got.
Yeah. Like our Arcturian friend. Or Liren. Like our Liren friend, JP.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Or at least that's one aspect of you, sir.
So they say.
Oh, well, there's many others.
That's right. There are many others.
I haven't discovered yet.
You multidimensional Brit, you.
There's about one or two people that I know here in town that is aware of multiple lives at one time. Because once you get into telepathic communications and you raise that vibration in that telepathic communication and you start asking questions, okay, you know, I feel like I'm connected to Arcturus. They'll come back with the information. Well, I feel like I'm connected with Pleiadians too. They'll come back with the information. I've had a couple of people that have parents from two star systems.
Right.
So I had to create a report that involved both star systems so that she or he could get that information and idea about what the planet looks like and what the people are and so on and so forth. And so they have both now have two lives that they are aware of that they can go back into.
So here's the thing, you know, there's this guy, right, somewhere, you know, I might be a manatee just having a dream, right? Hanging out in some other star system, somehow also existing here on planet Earth doing this.
That's correct. That's exactly it. We are beings made of light, made of energy, living a simultaneous existence in different dimensions all at once, including this little blue ball, planet Earth. And it's, there's, if you will, a fractal of the totality of our soul that operates and animates this human body. Just a small, small piece. And then there are other aspects of our total soul self that's out doing things in other places. So you may even be living on a tropical world someplace where it's nice and warm and sunny all the time.
Apparently I have an incarnation on Jupiter.
Ah.
And there's no chocolate there.
Oh, that's not good.
So, what I'm thinking is that if that's going to happen in the future, I'm going to start an import-export system to Jupiter.
Smart.
To export chocolate.
Smart man.
or just like, if I just thought of it, somebody else can roll with that. That isn't a good idea. There's a market there. Let me just say there's a market there.
Yeah, Donna, go ahead. You were going to say something.
There was another topic that had just came to me recently, and one of my clients had written in to me, and she asked me this question. She said, have I had life in an alternate / parallel world? So I had to ask Soltar about that because not that many clients were asked me that type of question. And so Soltar said, yes, she has pieces of her soul that's experiencing a parallel world, but in a different timeline. So I'm saying, that's interesting. How close would that be to the life pattern that she has here on this planet? There are some things that could be similar. There's some things that could be different, you know, in alternative parallel world. And I have never really thought about that, you know, because I'm so accustomed to thinking about, okay, we're multidimensional beings. But even multidimensional beings have pieces of that soul that could be on other parallel worlds besides this world that we live in. I am aware that there are universes out there as space expands, it moves.
Mm-hmm.
So when space moves, it means even universe expands, it grows. So, that's why they say there's no beginning, no end. It's just continuing. And I also understand that between universes, wormholes, that you go from one universe to another. If you outgrow the universe you're in, if you want to explore another universe, you go through that wormhole. And because like, Tolik had said that, you know, we're multidimensional beings, energy, light, sound, frequency. We could be transported into another universe and explore that universe in a greater way. So, you know, there's room for learning experiences wherever you go. And if you get tired of learning about the universe that you want to rest, you know, you go back to the source. So that's my understanding from what Soltar has been sharing with me lately.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So we're at the top of the hour, and I'd like to play something by the Splinter Group, which is called Supernatural. This is Peter Green, who was the original guitarist from Fleetwood Mac.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
And welcome back to Ever Beyond here on Wolf Spirit Radio. It's just past midnight. It's now the 12th of February. All those double numbers that we're doing. There was one moment I looked up at the clock and it said 11 Feb 23-33-33. Did my head in that one, did, while you were talking. We were talking about money as well at the time, which is like the third ray. The archetype of business is ray three. So anyway, I'm joined by Tolek and Adonna of the Andromedan Council, or the Andromeda Council. Do you want to talk about, is there any news from anywhere else in the Andromeda Council? Is it only Earth that's the kind of big drama queen capital of the galaxy?
Yes. We are the big drama queen of the galaxy because, and as we talked about a few times, there are, so 21. So 21 planets that are going to be going through the same transformation that we are. Mm-hmm. 18 of those are considerably different than Earth, but yet still have organic beings that live organic lives like we do. All right. The other two, and as I'm saying this, I'm sort of building a picture. Think of a pie. Out of the whole pie, Earth is the only slice where there is a multiplicity, a huge, great diversity of cosmic humans from all across the cosmos that are all living on the same block, this beautiful blue planet. There's great, great diversity in language, in humans, in culture, in quote-unquote religious beliefs, and that's another story altogether. But there's all this huge diversity on this one planet. And with all of that diversity, we, of course, have a clash in values from time to time. Having said that, for the most part, the other two planets that also have organic human, if you will, humanoids, they only have one or two races of people. And though they've been messed with by the reptilians as well, their own process of evolution and higher dimensional transformation is going to be a lot easier than ours because they're not as messed up as we are. And they also don't have the great diversity that we do. It's just going to be easier for a lot of other worlds because they don't have the great diversity that we do. And therefore, they don't have any clash of culture, ideas, thought, mores, values. They're pretty uniform from planet to planet. Not so with Earth. We're the great collective repository of life on this little pinwheel arm in the Milky Way galaxy. And we're out in the farther reaches of this galaxy. Yeah, we're like at the tail end of one of those. You take the Milky Way and you sort of look at it from top down. We're on an arm that's kind of like at 7 o'clock, but out at the tip. So we're not even near the central part of the galaxy.
It almost sounds like we're at the outpost.
Yeah, yeah, we're one of the outpost planets. The wild, wild west of the galaxy.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we are also emotional children. Like, I don't know, I'm speaking parenthetically, but maybe fifth or sixth graders from an emotional maturity perspective and from a spiritual, a literal knowledge of the spirit realms. Knowledge, we ain't that far up the hitching post either on that one. There's just a lot that we're going to have to learn as this planet transforms and when we ultimately start trading with other worlds. There's just so much that we're going to have to unlearn about our world and learn brand new about who we really are, where we really came from. Donna, what do you think about the rewriting of history books?
Oh, my goodness. The rewriting of the history books? Yes, definitely, because, as you all know, today we have technology that can, it's like a topographic readout map. If you look at History Channel, or Archaeology Channel, where they're scanning the land for the ancient buildings that were buried underneath there, and they're discovering a lot of materials, information that eventually history's gonna have to be rewritten. Our Universal Librarian for the Andromeda Council Main Biosphere has archive records of planet Earth and its beginning. So I was shown classrooms where people will be given updates. And we call them here downloads, because we're getting downloads from our star families as to the accuracy of information that is given to us. So in this case, when we come into the new paradigm of the Earth, there are going to be people that's going to be on the ship having to relearn all of the history of the planet and its people. So it's a big undertaking, because Azar, who happens to be the chief medical officer for the Andromeda Council Main Biosphere, she is in charge of the Solaris records. And with that, she knows the level of the Solaris belief systems that has been programmed into them, you know, throughout the centuries of their incarnations here on Earth. So all that has to be healed, cleared out, and introduced, or should I say reintroduced, the truth about this planet and its people and how we came to be, why we're here. Where are we going from here? And in addition to that, they also will expose us to people from other star systems, their histories as well. So, it's, like I said, it's a big undertaking. And this is something that they have already discussed aboard the Andromeda Council meetings they have had, you know, throughout the years. And what can we do for planet Earth? How can we bring humanity up to our level where we're at right now? And so this is part of the responsibilities of the Andromeda Council to take on this planet and its people and bring them back up to the level where we should be. In this respect.
So does that mean, someone, for instance, from deep in the desert, incredible poverty, almost starving, to be brought up to the level of, you know, the most abundant of us?
Okay, I'll repeat JP's question. He said, does that mean, as an example, someone who lives deep in poverty out in the desert, maybe they don't have a good home, maybe it's scarcity of water, they're just having a very, very difficult life, that even that kind of impoverished person will have an opportunity to be brought up to the highest level of knowledge and education and living conditions?
Absolutely. If they want to. It's up to them.
Yeah. You know, I would anticipate, Donna, that you're talking about a time when nothing is contingent on money any longer.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. Yep. Changes that we must make that need to happen.
Coming on from the idea of deprogramming, it seems to me that the entire human population of Earth and off planet has a certain form of PTSD. I'm sure that the Andromedans and Arcturians are aware of it. How do they deal with that?
That's a really good question. I'll address one aspect of it, but I'll first repeat your question, your statement to Adana. What JP said was, and again, I'm going to paraphrase.
Okay.
I'm sure that many of us, as we incarnate life here on Earth, suffer from a form of PTSD, post-traumatic stress, even beginning our lives here. How do people from, you know, what we know as Earth, on Earth as the Andromeda Council, in deep space called the Galactic Council, do they have, what kind of plans might they have to help people with, if you will, spiritual and or emotional post-traumatic stress? And then I'll address how people like Marie Batchelor is currently helping people with that same topic. So, Adana, go ahead.
Okay. It's interesting you brought that up because Andromedan Council members didn't leave anything out. They had thought of every single thing they could think of for humanity's healing, adjustment to new life, you know, being exposed to other star people. They have programs within the ship, especially within the hospital biospheres. You have, like you do on Earth, you have medical teams, you have counseling departments, you have education departments, you have apartments where they get to meet and adjust to other life forms that's out there. This is the first thing they will do, number one, is they will evaluate the soul essence of the incarnated person, Earth person, and see where he or she is at. What kind of things that they need to be healed of. Medical teams, that's the first thing. The second thing is counseling. Once they get through the counseling, they go into education to update them in terms of new information or we introduce information that they have forgotten over the centuries. Then they have their reevaluation again to see where they're at. Are they comfortable with it? Are they understanding what is happening to them? Are they able to deal with telepathy or deal with any kind of incoming abilities that they will have? Then they would either decide to remain with the new paradigm of the Earth, or they could remain on the ship, or they could go into what they call exchange program with other planets. So they could learn new trades, begin their new lives on other worlds. It just is so many options that humanity have to work with. So that's pretty deep in terms of what they think and overall needs of humanity to begin with. So what?
Well, before I jump in, JP, any questions on your part? Wonderings?
I always have wonderings. That's my my entire life has been making space for wonderings. That's why I have a large diversity of guests, because, you know, yes, not one of those, you know, a myriad of guests can answer all the questions that pop up during my, you know.
I do quite well. Yes. And fortunately there are, emerging on this planet right now, some very, very, talented and gifted women that I and Adana have met. Two of them are, Dr. Marie Batchelor, who is a friend of ours, a very elegant young woman, a very bright young woman who, was a family MD in Australia for many years, a mother of five children. And she was taking a walk one day about seven years ago on a Saturday morning with her family, and a young teenage girl lost control of her car and killed one of, Marie's sons. I think he was age four at the time. Well, that event completely transformed Marie's life. Suffice it to say that here we are, I guess 7 or 8 years later, and today she is still a healer, though she no longer is a practicing medical doctor. And what she's able to do is detect vibrational inequities, vibrational problem areas in people's bodies, and also because she has the traditional training that she's had, she can identify problem areas of in people, and using the energy, the unique energy healing methods that she has, she can help clear up people who have different variations of post-traumatic stress or have various emotional challenges that keep them from fulfilling the best versions of their lives that they can be or want to be. There's a young woman I know here in the States who lives down in the greater Phoenix area, comes up to Sedona once every week. Her name is Sarah Christine Graham. And what she does specifically is that she will look at, I'll create a fictitious person, Susan James or Susan Jones. And let's say that Susan has certain problem areas in her life. Well, Sarah will look at this person and through a series of queries and tests determine what kind of DNA bleed through that there's been from this person's ancestors, this person's family lineage, going back to the mother or the grandmother or the great-great-grandmother, emotional negative programming that's been transferred through the DNA, traumas that prior relatives have passed on, simply birthing this person into this human body. Sarah has certain modalities that she uses to help release these modes of post-traumatic stress as people incarnate in this life. And I'm sure there are other people doing similar work. There's a gentleman who's a friend of Keith Roberts who does ground control with Major Tom Radio, and his name is Viking. And he and I were speaking about this, and he has some pretty in-depth knowledge about this very topic. So there's all sorts of people that are emerging these days that can help people who've either incarnated on this world with post-traumatic stress and or through the course of their own lives have had enough really difficult emotional trauma that the energy from those traumas can be released as well, so that those people also can live, if you will, more emotionally free, happy, self-fulfilled lives. And everything that I've learned about this topic indicates that unless people determine that this is an issue, that
they have this residual energy, however they've gotten it. About the only way to live the kind of free, fulfilling life that we have a right to live is simply to have the work done and scrub it. You know, it's kind of like, scrubbing your emotional suit and making sure it's nice and shiny and clean. You can start over and live whatever kind of life you want. Making choices from whatever perspective you want, because there's no more dross. There's no more emotional junk weighing you down. And there's no more energy. There's no more, if you will, negative energy weighing you down as you try to make different decisions in your life. It's a fascinating topic. I don't claim to understand all of it, but I've watched as people have been lightened and healed to the DNA level. Lots of rooms full of women crying, joys of relief, joys of happiness. It's amazing what happens.
Yeah. And yeah, indeed, we're friends with Viking. He's a regular, guest, and indeed, Keith is becoming a regular producer on Wolf Spirit. I'd like to welcome them all. It's great. We're getting more producers and more hosts, slowly building up. It's good.
Good.
Not too fast, but, not too slow. It's just a good building rate.
Well, it better not be too fast, because you're certainly an intelligent man and highly capable, but you're only one dude.
Yeah, well, I'm. Yep. So,
spread the workload, my friends.
Yeah,
the workload.
Yeah. Well, no, we have a good little team here. Vanessa's on the side of the chat room and other. Other groups, we got, what's that thing? We got a forum.
Okay.
And, we all wear togas and things and, laurel wreaths. We have a forum, we have a chat room and Facebook pages and things like that. So, sure. So we've got a couple more people. We've got Gaz and Sean on, as moderators, and, I have, Becky here with me, doing some graphics and generally being amazing. So that's all good. And as I said, it's growing slowly and we're having fun with it.
Yeah, organic growth is a nice way to do it, because then you can manage the growth better, without a doubt.
Yeah, I don't want it to overwhelm anyone.
Yeah. Have any callers or questions that are coming in that we can answer, or is this just kind of our own private conversation?
Oh, no, there's loads of people having a good time.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can tune in to wolfspiritradio.com/radio show, and you'll be able to come into the chat room. And, Vanessa's saying we're also going to have a wolf book too, which is some sort of social media that people can, hang out with and post stuff to and stuff.
You know, sure.
Like Facebook. Yeah. So, and indeed, yeah, Viking, appears, he's here every Thursday on, Wolf Spirit Radio.
Anyway, bright man, great depth. And wealth of information, without a doubt.
Good voice as well.
Yes, he does. Rise, big man. Yeah. Hey, by the way, how is our gentleman friend Alex Collier doing? How's he doing these days?
He's good. He's good. He's I've just done his promo for next Friday. He's done 51 webinars so far.
Okay.
Over the last 2.5 years.
Good. Hmm. How about his health? I know he had a couple of rounds of some real internal challenges.
He seems to be more or less over the health challenges that he had, indeed.
Good. I'm good. I'm glad to hear it.
So indeed. Yeah. And, if you want to volunteer, get in touch with, Vanessa, or Bring the Light, Sean, and, we'll find some way of giving you a place
But everybody needs a place to express, don't they?
Yeah, well said. Yeah. Yeah, and you, JP, you provide, a very, warm and inviting environment for people to, express and share their views. I'm honored to consider you a friend over these many years, and you've always made it, just a great environment for us to open up and talk. And so just a simple thank you from me to you for your years of friendship and intelligence and sense of humor from time to time.
We need that sense of humor.
Yes.
I tell you, you know, I, one of the first individual stars of the Pleiades that I kind of identified as a potential, is that home, before I learned the bigger story, was in fact Taygetter. You know, and it was that's a really funny name, really strange word, but that's the one that seems to be something to do with me. So could you ask Agona about this potential connection, please?
Did you hear this? Oh, okay. He said, interestingly enough, that when he started all of this work years ago, one of the brightest stars in the sky, I'm speaking parenthetically, one of the brightest stars in the sky that spoke the loudest to him was the star Taygeta, located in the Pleiades.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, the star of, in fact, our home world, which is Dakota.
You know, that's interesting that you said that, JP, because back in 1987, after my UFO sighting in front of my house, about a month later, I went to see a new friend who happens to be a channel in Central Texas area. And we went outside because they live on a farmhouse. And it's on top of a hill, and there's nothing for miles around. And we decided that we were going to go outside and look at the stars in the night sky. And I decided, well, I'm going to find out where my home wall is. So I looked up in the sky, and I was pulled to a symbol of a question in the sky. And the symbol of the question, I asked my friend, I said, "What constellation is this?" I said, "It looks like an upside down question mark." And she said, "Oh, you're looking at the Pleiades." I said, "Well, that's where I'm from."
Surprise.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
And how about this subject matter, this topic of Taygeta and its relevance to JP in his own life as he thrives on this little blue ball called Earth?
Are you speaking of, in terms of what his life was like in Taygeta?
Well, yeah, you know, what is the direct relevance of this knowledge that he's always had as Taygeta being a special place to him in his life?
Well, because, as soon as, Tolex got finished speaking, I'm hearing from Sota, he said, "Well, you know, he is from our home world." I said, "You mean to tell me that we've been speaking to JP all this time and he's from Dakota?" And he said, "Yes."
Yep.
I said, "No wonder."
"Hi, neighbor."
"No wonder we get along so well."
Finally.
Yes. And, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm looking at JP right now. I think it was roughly... the people that originally populated Dakota hundreds of thousands of years earlier had moved from the Lyra star system.
Yes.
JP. So there's the direct Lyran connection. The people of Dakota are originally settlers from the Lyran star system.
Yeah, well, that certainly makes sense. And they are fifth dimensional now. Were they third dimensional then? What's the deal with that?
Ah,
Okay, I'm looking at Donna. He said, I'm going to smirk in my face. He said, well, our people from the Taygeta star system, planet Dakota, are currently fifth dimensional. When they originally moved to Dakota from Lyra, were they three-dimensional people? Were they organic people back then?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew that answer, but, yep. Yes. So, double yes. Yes. Yes, they were. And so, is there a hidden question behind the words, what's with that?
Well, what's with that? So does that mean that they've gone through a similar process to us? Or, has their life been a lot more peaceful?
Good question. Yeah. You know,
what's up with that?
Okay. Sorry. So JP's saying, did they go through a process that we are going through? Did they go through a similar process that we're going to go through? Or was their evolutionary process a lot easier? Being three-dimensional humans on a relatively uniform world.
According to Soltar, he said that, I'm asking him mentally, how many of the thousands of years ago, he told me it's about 150,000 Earth years ago.
Yeah.
Close to 200,000 years ago because of Earth terms and their terms different.
That's actually what you told me, a couple of years ago about the migration of the Lyran people to Dakota, a couple hundred thousand years.
And he said that, in their three-dimensional forms, when they arrived to the Pleiades, in the Taygeta star system, Dakota role was relatively, I want to say new. It's because I could see the pureness of the planet. And they have definitely an easier time of evolutionary process than we do here on this planet. And because there was no diversity of people on Dakota, it's pretty much, how should I say, peaceful planet. Life there in the early stages was very, it's almost kind of like, I keep hearing tropical type of atmosphere. It makes me want to think of the Amazon location or the Australia location. It seems to have some kind of tropical pureness to it. The animals they have there, are, you know, very different from what we have here. But the animals there are not, violent, I should say, like the animals we have here. They're pretty peaceful, wolves that they lived in at the beginning. And then, of course, there were founding families that set up their settlements on the Dakota wall. And, with that, they began to expand and grow from there. Becoming a fifth dimensional, planet. And so, as in answering to your question, it is much, much more easier for them from the Lyra star system into the Taygeta star system, especially in the role of Dakota, compared to what we're experiencing here on this planet Earth.
You don't know what it's like down there, do you?
That's right.
To borrow the term from the Star Trek universe, welcome to Urapente, the mining prison planet.
Oh, one of those episodes,
Right.
Because, you know, sometimes it is like a Star Trek episode where they get kind of brainwashed into believing that they've been on this planet forever and they just work and they do this thing. I love those episodes because that's really how things are, aren't they? You know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
And we have, we have to also make sense in all the different worlds that we exist in. Whether it's being, I'm really looking forward to the breakdown of the worship of authority and of money and of religions and all of those things until people can finally see each other for who and what they are, as souls incarnating and instead of trying to step on somebody, you can have the chance to enable some other soul to express themselves and make the world a better place.
And there you have it. Absolutely.
Ba-doom.
Yeah. And I know we have like 15 minutes left, but that would be a great close to the show.
So would Adonna like to express any, or in fact, is the captain willing to say anything? I was going to ask about the clans as well. The clans of Dakota, of Dakota. Any word that we can have on that?
Well, I can tell you that Adonna and I are both born of a family that's of the Bear Clan. There's certainly many others. Do you have any contributions to that? Eagle is one of the clans, one of the other clans. Are there any particular aspects that you're interested in regarding each of the clans or any of the focus?
Well, how does it work? I mean, the clans, do they gather together on councils? How many members of a council do they have? That sort of, socio-political structure of the way things work in other worlds? That's what I'm interested in. How do they do it? How do they, you know, can we use their model? Or is our, do we have a pathological condition here on Earth that prevents us from working in that more idealistic way, perhaps? Or maybe it's more rigid. I don't know. What's the deal?
Yeah. Okay. On the planet Dakota, and I'll contribute some of my thoughts, and I'll let Donna jump in. On planet Dakota, there were five, if you will, founding families that created the total population of Dakota as it is today. And Adonna and I, we happen to come from one of the five founding families. Interestingly enough, as do you, kind sir. Those families and some of the people who act as advisors sit on a council. And the council basically listens to its population. they don't govern per se. They just listen and they help and advise whenever somebody asks for advice. But they certainly don't have government as we know it today. It simply acts as a listening board and an advisory, organization.
Because essentially you don't need to take permission from it. You can just do what you want to do. You don't need to ask permission from anybody to do something. Is that
right? And it's a very mature society. People are emotionally mature adults. They're not acting out. There's no murder. There's no crime. I mean, people have been living in peace on Dakota for many, many years. So therefore, there's no heavy-handed government with laws. Adonna, your thoughts?
Essentially, he's right. It's very basic. You know, you honor each other, you respect each other, integrity. There are respect to the land We don't harm our planet. We do not harm each other.
Don't harm the animals.
If there is any slightness of any distractions of some kind, immediately they go into the healing rooms. They have healing rooms that will scan, you know, their bodies. Say, okay, this was a little bit off. We need to put it back in place. So that's why we have such harmony on our world. As for you, JP, I was told that you come from the First Bounty family. So we're essentially
cousins.
We're essentially cousins, distant cousins to each other. It's not by accident that I could pick up the energy patterns of our, I guess, First Bounty family members. Extended family members upon this planet. I'm not surprised at all about that fact. So, with that being said, it's relatively, very humble and harmony. And, you know, if people want to express some concerns, we talk about it and we, issue, whatever it is that they need, it balances itself out. So, it's nothing like this world on planet Earth. Planet Earth is a mess compared to what we have. Dakota is very simple life. It's very easy going life.
Yeah. And of course there's technology available that pretty much will create for us whatever we need when we need it.
Right. Exactly.
You know? So, yeah, like
I see. Because so you have a kind of replicator technology, so no one ever needs to steal anything because you can have whatever you want or whatever you need. So what does the replicator run on? Do you know? And who built the biospheres? The little question goes on, and then the audience has got some questions as well. So,
Yeah, they all show up with 10 minutes left. Great.
Yeah, they always, yeah. Friendly race of reptilians. Where are the friendly race of reptilians from?
Oh, boy, I have those notes written down somewhere deep in my folders. Yes, there's a friendly race of reptilians, and they are wise. They're highly intelligent. I wouldn't call them warm and friendly, but they are highly peaceful. And in terms of what we here on Earth call the Andromeda Council, which is what we call in deep space the Galactic Council, he sits on that board as an advisor. So that we can know what the bad news reptilians are up to and when they're up to it. So, I forget his name. I've got it written down though.
Yeah, but they transport all of their race of people to triangular star system.
Well, the
triangle star system. That's the way I
thought.
The
Zeta Reticulans were
transported. Okay,
yeah,
okay,
it was the Zetas. It was the Zetas that
the
were
Zetas, okay.
sent over to Triangulum.
Right.
I don't remember
Top
which.
Of my head.
I don't remember which star, but they were sent over. Yeah, the original, way back, the original Zeta Reticulan race, for many reasons. Came to the people of the council, and now this is, of course, Andromeda/Galactic Council, and I said, listen, we need a change. For many reasons, we need a change. And the people of the council said, okay, we'll take it under advisement. And they did. And they, there was some collaboration, and one of the three major stars of the Triangulum constellation was chosen as a new star system and homeworld for the original people from Zeta Reticuli. Of course, these are not the great, great, great grandchildren that have been wandering the cosmos and that have coordinated with the Sirius B reptilians and the Draco reptilians. What we're now talking about are the original people from Zeta Reticuli. Good people.
Good people.
Yep. But getting back to your question, I think what JP was asking is, what area of space does this very friendly, vegetarian, wise reptilian, ambassador come from? What area of space is he originally from? It's in my notes. I don't, it'd probably take me 3 or 4 minutes to find it.
I keep hearing Hawaiian constellation, but I keep thinking Betelgeuse. But don't quote me on that, but I keep thinking Orion. You have to get back to your notes on that.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember.
Yeah, there's 7 years of notes. I don't know where it is right now.
But you asked me that question years ago, and I can't remember.
In any case.
So, yeah, so, triangle. So, what else?
Yes.
There's a question from Richard. He is saying...
The third?
3231, actually.
Okay.
Richard 3231. So,
see, I thought that. What's all this thing going on? Richard the third.
Something's going on, I don't know. But, you know, I don't know, it's a bit serious. When the planet Earth finally rolls over on its side, where north is west, west is south, how long would this process take? 1 hour? 2 hours? He asked.
What? That would be ugly. This gentleman asked, how long will the process take of the crust of the Earth as it moves from like 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and when it finally does its crustal shift adjustment?
The timing after shifting it?
Yeah, I know that it's a slow process. It's not going to be one of those overnight things. And it's moving. Matter of fact, it's moving right now. It's moving right now. There are a number of aboriginals, including the Inuits, up in the, you know, the northern regions of northern Canada, of Alaska, that have said, the stars are in the wrong place. Yeah, so the crust...
I sometimes see that, you know. I watch because I know that in the winter, like now, at a certain time of night, I will be able to observe Orion, right? Directly below my garden, you know, at the end of my garden, I've got a little chair, which is called the Orion seat, and we work, and you can sit there and watch Orion twinkling away and Sirius and all that stuff. So it's great.
Yeah.
And sometimes the moon is in the wrong place. Sometimes the moon rises in the wrong place.
Yeah. Well, it's not the moon that's moved. It's this planet that has moved.
We're wobbling.
Yes. Yeah, that too. Hey, can I,
go ahead.
Can I make a little, promotional thing?
Promotion from Tolek.
Yes. For anyone who has always had a visceral internal sense that they're not from this planet, they come from somewhere else out in the stars, Adana has been doing a great job for approximately a year and a few months, talking to about 700 people across the globe from 36 plus countries, and providing each person with a star ancestry report, either basic or premium. And I can tell you categorically, because she and I do a lot of work together, we talk a lot, that the feedback from these people has been amazing in terms of the accuracy of information that Donna has been able to provide. Courtesy vis-a-vis Azar, the chief medical officer of the Andromeda Council Biosphere, because she's got all of the records of all the people that live on planet Earth, all the soul records, yeah. So if there's anybody that wants to get a star ancestry report from Adana, they can go to her website, starancestry.com, or they can write to her at star_ancestry@hotmail.com. And I know Adana doesn't like to bang her drum, but she's really good at what she does, and she's helped a lot of people. So I just thought I'd do a little plug for her. That's all.
Thank you.
I'm done.
There you go. So, Andromeda Council.
Andromeda Council.
Any news from the biosphere? And like us. Oh yeah. So who built the Andromedan biosphere? And who built, where are these ships made? Is there an enormous kind of, I mean, how do you make something like, how do you build a ship? So surely it's manifested like some sort of,
That's a good question.
I got a good question. Go. Man, how do you do this thing?
How do you build a planet? How do you build a hollow planetoid that goes anywhere from the size of Pluto to the size of Jupiter? That's multidimensional on top of that. That's a really good question. Let me answer the first part of the other question, and I'll let Adana ruminate on the how do you build, who built. There are 12 Andromeda Council / Galactic Council, otherwise known as spheres. There are 12 spheres in and around this solar system. 9 of them are currently ringing the outer rim of the solar system, if you will. And think of the solar system as a large energetic bubble. Well, in fact, 9 of the biospheres are providing an electronic bubble. Rather than a fence, an electronic bubble protecting the planets of this system as it's going through its upgrade, which some people call an ascension. 3 of those remaining spheres are in and around Earth space, and there is also a second bubble of protection in and around Earth and the Sun, relative to the Sun, providing another layer of protection. Because we don't need to be messed with anymore. We've been messed by reptilians and other beings that don't have our interest in mind for over the course of hundreds and thousands of years. And we need to be able to go through this upgrade process, this evolutionary process, in peace. That's what the biospheres are doing in and around this star system. Adana, thoughts about where or how these biospheres were first created? Some guy with a big machine popping them out? Go ahead, I'll let her talk.
Soltar was showing me they have a huge crystal technology within their biosphere that can create other biospheres. What they do is the engineering biosphere will create a dimension, what the size would be, how many miles wide, how many miles deep.
It's sort of a terraforming specifications,
right,
for a biosphere. Yeah.
Terraforming specifications. And then they go to an area of space where it's away from other planets.
Yep, smart.
Because they do not want the technology to interfere with the other planets. So they have to go to an area of space that is nothing around. And then they will beam into space a holding pattern to create this terraforming biospheres. Then they put an energy bubble around it to hold it in place. Then they go inside and create the floors, the quarters, the park, the whole process. The generators usually within the center of the planet.
Right.
Biosphere, if you will. And then they get that set up.
Isn't that like a big crystal blue plasma core?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
Yes. And with that, once they get everything in place, they start it up to make sure that it's operational on all levels. And how long does this take? Not very long, according to them. It takes, in our Earth time, it takes a week to create a biosphere.
How about that?
And I can't imagine that, you know, and a human mind can fathom that. But in the other dimensions, it's nothing to them. You know, they can create whatever they want to create in a split second. So in this case, within a week's time, it's all done and operational. Then they test it out, just like what we do with our transportation here, where we create a new transportation, whether it's a car, airplane, or boat. We test it out first before we put it out to be run by other people. That's what they do.
Yeah. And on the seventh day...
I didn't even think about on the seventh day.
On the seventh day, they rested. Somebody said,
Magrathea is the word that comes
That's
to mind.
It's time to get a beer. Vodka ale. Yes.
Yeah. L-ale. Yes.
L-ale.
So hang on, no, I've just confused everybody. I've just typed Magrathea as the response to a question. Magrathea is the fictional name of the planet that created planets, in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The question is, what is the name of the person that Adonna is communicating with? And I want to get it exactly right. It's Captain what?
Oh, it's the gentleman. Who's the commander of the primary Andromeda Council biosphere? It's a, it is a pseudonym. It's a name that he's created, and it's Zoltar. Same guy we've been talking to for 7 years, Zoltar. He's not gone anywhere. He's been on the primary Andromeda Council biosphere and, responsible for all 12 biospheres for many years. That's his job. He's commander. It's just that she hasn't used that word too often because early on when I was speaking, a lot of people made fun of that name. And I said, hey, this is a created name. Or, oh, wow, what if, you know, this guy sit inside of a glass booth and spit out, what do you call it, you know, psychic cards? I'm like, all right, fine. We're not going to use the word again. So, yeah, it's just... I've chosen not to repeat that name simply because it took a lot of grief for it. But yeah, it's Zoltar, Zoltar, and it's a pseudonym.
Another name for commander.
Yeah, it's a created name. It means commander.
Okay. So Zoltar.
Yeah, it could be commander. Yeah.
So anyway. Magrathea, the fictional planet that created planets, can make a biosphere in a week. And as you say, you know, on the seventh day they had a beer.
That's
so,
right.
You know, who knows? Listen, we're right out of time. We're running over time. Thank you so much for coming on Ever Beyond. We've gone beyond the beyond. I hope it will fit in a 2-hour slot. Thank you very much. And, www.andromedacouncil.com. And www.starancestry.com. Tolek and Adonna, thank you very much and good night.
You're very welcome, sir.
You're welcome.
You.